Session number 23848, Reel 16.
Mr. Wild Gust, Reel 16.
Now, of course, I was in a worse position because not only had I been hit again, but I had an undressing on my arm. It was, and I still can't understand how this happened. I remember seeing it hanging from a bush, this sort of blood-stained pad of bandage and the rest of it. And I said, well, there's only one thing we can do. I said, we better try and get back ourselves. And he, to which he agreed, and he rolled on his stomach and started to crawl back. And I had been in a sort of squatting position, rolled onto my side, facing the enemy. And before the sergeant had gone or out of earshot, there was a most tremendous explosion that I heard. A cloud of smoke came up from my abdomen. I thought I'd been kicked by a mule and realised I'd been hit in the abdomen by something. What it was actually was a tracer bullet which had caused the smoke to appear. And my first reaction, I put my hand at my back, thinking the bullet had gone right through me. But when I brought it back again, there was no blood on it, so I realised at least it hadn't gone through me. And I then prepared to die, to put it in, because I thought, well, I shan't get out of this lot, and it's. I think they're going to keep on firing. I then didn't know whether to lie on my back or my stomach to protect myself more. And the hours passed. I don't know. I think it was about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning when I was first wounded. By this time, it was probably 2 hours later, and I didn't seem to didn't go unconscious. I remember my runner came out to me and he said, we can't do anything for you at the moment. And he asked for some water, and he got a water bottle, and I found I hadn't any mouth to put it in. So poured it onto my balaclava, and I sucked the water out of that. But then I thought, well, if I've been hit to my abdomen, one shouldn't drink water, so I didn't. And then eventually another stretcher bearer came out to me and said he couldn't do anything because he was by himself. I told him to go over to see a casualty who I remember had been hit about the same time as I was, and I heard him run off. I heard another shot, and I heard later that they shot him as well, but I don't know about that, whether it was ever verified.
Who was the other casualty? Who was the other casualty that you noticed?
I have no idea. I can remember, see his face now, but I don't know what his name was.
In terms of, like, what was he doing, and where was he in relation
to? He was looking. He'd been hit somewhere, and he was looking absolutely scared stiff. I don't know whether you know that. Well, I'm sure you do, the picture, the scream. Well, that was the type of expression he had on his face, actually, now to come to think of it. But this was right at the beginning, when the first time the firing had started.
This was when you were first hit in the arm?
Yeah.
Were you aware of the battle, what was actually happening in the battle?
Not
at all. You were still conscious, so you're aware of the stretcher bearer coming.
Well, I was conscious of that sort of thing happening, and I couldn't understand really why I wasn't going unconscious. There was a lot of firing going on in the war diaries, described as bush fighting. Everybody was sort of doing their own thing, and I eventually remember finishing lying on my back with my head towards the German lines, and contemplating my feet, which seemed to be a long way away. And I got some what were known as boots infantry officers, or boots. They were like dispatch rider boots, but in brown. And my platoon always said that if I was killed or wounded, they'd have those off me. And I remember thinking, I wonder who's going to have those when I've, after all this is over. And I prepared to die. I remember looking into the sky and I saw some bombers going over and the odd fighter planes, but a lot of Boston bombers who were probably going over to Tunis or some such place. And I remember thinking what a strange place to finish one's life on a hillside in Tunisia. But I wasn't over worried. It didn't sort of... I wasn't frightened at the fact that I was going to die, because I was sure I was. But I was quite concerned with the fact that I was still conscious all the time and bleeding. What I had forgotten was that when this runner came out with the water, he did put a dressing on my arm and tie it rather tightly around my wrist, around my elbow, I should say. And but apart from that, he couldn't do anything. And by this time, the hours had gone by, and there was a tremendous amount of firing then. There was mortars opening up, and I could hear them, the mortar being fired. I could hear the whistle, and then I waited for the explosion.
And you're aware of whether it was a German or a British mortar?
I don't know whether whose it were. I think they were ours mainly. But there was... small arms fire coming in both directions. When they eventually got me off, and I was still conscious, a bullet had gone through my binoculars that were on my chest. A bullet I found later had gone through my uniform, which didn't hit me. And I couldn't move. It was impossible. I just sort of lay there and on my back. And as I was looking at my boots, I thought, well, at least I've got my legs. And no sooner had I thought that than there was a thump in my left thigh, followed by a thump in my right on my right shin. And the shock was was enough to get me on my feet, and I ran. I don't know, I suppose I only ran about 5 yards, if that. Probably 5 or 6 paces. But I ran towards our lines and collapsed, and all I remember then was lying in a pool of blood. It was coming from everywhere, as you can well imagine by this time. And I still didn't go unconscious. And then eventually somebody said, it's all over now, wounded, and everybody can come out. And 4 men came out with a blanket and threw me in it, or put me in it, and carted me off. And we were carried eventually. All the wounded were gathered together around, and they built a fire because the advance had been very successful. And they decided that they could build a fire without sort of giving positions away. So they built this very big fire and put the wounded around it. And one of my platoon came up to me and said, have you got any tea? Because I think I mentioned that I always told them that if they wanted tea, they came to me. So they got the tea out of my pocket and made it. And... by this time, the battalion had caught up with A Company, so we had more men and more administrative lot, and the doctor, Dr. Lart, had also appeared. He and I got on quite well together. We used to play chess, and I remember when I saw him, I said, for goodness sake, can't you make me unconscious? And he said, I think I can manage to do that. He said, I won't bother with your abdomen, but he had a look at my leg, and he had a look at the arm, and he put dressings on those, and he put a dressing on the face. And I said, they came with this tea in a nursing cup, and I said, can I have a drink? And he said, I don't see why you shouldn't. And the chappie who got it, poured it into my ass, straight onto the top. And what I didn't realise then, but realised later, was the stub of the tooth which had been shot out. And the pain when that hit that was worse than the pain of any bullet hitting anybody anywhere. And I was in agony until it died off. But up to now, I hadn't had any pain. I was just sort of completely numb, without any feeling. I just wanted to be made unconscious so I could forget it. But I didn't. I was sort of, by this time, in and out of consciousness, and I remember being put on a stretcher, they said, we shall have to carry you over, or the stretcher bearers were told they'd have to carry them over the mountain because nobody knew where the advanced dressing station was, nobody knew where the field hospital was because the advance had been so quick that they hadn't had time to set them up. And so when darkness came, and bearing in mind I'd been wounded early in the morning and it was now 4 or 5 in the afternoon and dark, the rain came down. They put me on a stretcher with one blanket, and from then on it poured with rain, and I was carried across up mountains, across streams. I was dropped onto boulders, and it came through the stretcher into your back. I woke up once with my right arm had fallen off the stretcher, and they put me down, and the stretcher bearer kept walking, and he woke me up by putting his foot on my arm, on the wound. They then were stuck at the side of a hill, and I heard them say, one of them say, I can't go any further, to which I said, what happens to me then? And they picked me up. They took me to the field dressing station, who told them they couldn't do anything, they'd have to find a surgical unit, and they didn't know where that was. And on and off during the night, I inquired where we were, and they didn't know, and eventually I remember being taken into a big tent and put on the floor by a very badly wounded German soldier. Officer, doctors sort of looked at me and put me on a table and asked me my name, rank and number, which I thought if I'd have been unconscious I wouldn't have been able to tell him. Asked me where I'd been wounded and how, and I told them, and they said, well, you ought not to be alive then, but can you eat these? And they gave me 20 sulfur tablets, sulfanilamide. And there again, I often wonder what would have happened if I hadn't been conscious enough to swallow them, because they were as big as horse pills. And they then started to examine me, and the first thing I remember them saying was, you're lucky, the bullet went through this, your notebook. And they found the bullet in the clothing in my chest. It had gone into my abdomen, through the abdominal wall, and then come back up through my chest. And I'd forgotten I'd even got this notebook down my tunic. Before the attack, I'd got the notebook over, and I said to my batman, what do I do with that? And he said, well, you usually stuff it down your tunic. So I did, and it had been there for 3 or 4 days. I had forgotten all about it. But and then I remember a very severe pain in my arm. And the next thing, I was asking for a cup of tea. And somebody said, you'll get a cup of tea when we're good and ready. And when I came to again, it was dawn, or light. And they said, the only way we can get you back is on a mule. We'll put you on a pannier, on a mule. There was a man on the other side of myself, and unfortunately these mules hadn't been used to carting bodies about. They'd only been used to carting, general wood and hay and that sort of thing. And also the mules' tracks were wide enough for the mule, but they weren't wide enough for panniers. So whenever we went along these tracks, we went through bushes, and when the mules swung his head round, they used to tell us, well, hit your feet and sort of compress you. And the pain and the discomfort was such that I swore if they'd give me my gun, I'd shoot them. But I then realised I hadn't got any. They said, we've cut everything off. And I was, rather strangely, I was rather distressed that they'd spoilt my equipment. I said, you can't spoil equipment like that. But of course, they didn't worry about me. Anyway, after we'd been trotting along with these mules for some time, the fellow on the other side, the mule got restless, and the chappie on the other side, pannier slipped, and he was stuck between the mule's flanks, and they just managed to get him off. And I said, if you don't get me off this thing, I shall shoot them. And they got me off just before the mule kicked up his heels and went chasing down this mountain path with the muleteer, if you can call it, the Arab in charge of him, or running after him. And I can remember that distinctly, him kicking his heels as he went. And from then on, they carted me by hand. It was little glimpses of being put in ambulances, taken out, put into places with bright lights, which I imagine were operating theatres. And then somebody saying, would you like some fruit, sir? And I opened my eyes and said, yes, what is it? And he said, we've got some tinned fruit here. And it was a nursing orderly, and he helped me to sit upright, but as I got upright, I blacked out, and they put me back again. And I said, what day is it? And they said, April the 2nd, and I'd been wounded on March the 30th, so my only reaction was that I'd missed April Fool's Day. And I asked if I could see my medical notes, and he said, you're not allowed to. But I insisted, at least I asked him, yes, and he said, well, I'll show you them as long as you don't tell anybody you've seen them. And why I wanted to know, I don't know. I think I said to him, how long shall I be in hospital? About a week. And he showed me the notes, and it said that I hadn't been operated on for 45 hours on the abdomen, that I'd had morphia five times, I had 5 pints of whole blood and 3 pints of plasma, and at the bottom, in red ink in capital letters, underlined, it said, can do no more. And I thought, being optimistic, I thought that was the end of my medical treatment, that they meant that they couldn't do any more medical treatment. Of course, on the other hand, it meant that they didn't give me much chance of living. And once or twice, I was surprised to see a couple of doctors chatting at the bottom of my bed and looking at me and turning away, and I wondered what I'd done wrong. But eventually, one of them came to me and said, you're very fortunate. He said, you haven't broken a bone in your body. He said, what I'd do with your right arm is move it about as much as you can to keep the circulation going. So I used to dutifully lift it up and move it and put it back again. 1 to 3 weeks later, I realised there was no bone in my radius. It had been shot out. And they must have told me these things to boost my morale. And they said, we're moving you back to Bone by ambulance.
Did you know where this hospital was?
The first hospital was a place called Tabarka, which is just inside Tunisia on the Algerian border. And it was there that you could still hear the guns. And one night, after I'd been there about a week, as far as I know, about a week. There was a thunderstorm and thunder and guns as well. And there were two parachute officers who'd been slightly wounded who were being discharged from hospital. And it must have been midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and they're inquiring how to get back to the front. And I thought they must be mad, wanted to go back there after this. But that was the difference, of course, between being slightly wounded, and as I was. I mean, I didn't realise, I was daft enough not to realise whether I'd been seriously wounded or not. It did say on my medical things, evacuate UK, which I thought was rather decent. But otherwise, it was... sorry about that. It was... I got cordite in my left eye, and it took me all my time to see across the ward, which, of course, were tents. Anyway, when they said they'd move me back to Bone, which was, I don't know, 40 miles, maybe more, to the general hospital there, I was put in an ambulance, and although when I was wounded, the wounds were numb, by this time, the feeling was beginning to come back again, and the pain was getting rather excruciating. And I remember in this ambulance, every small stone that it went over, the pain was terrible, in fact, and I was the only person in it. And I had to sort of bang on the thing to get the driver to stop occasionally, and he used to come round and ask me what was wrong, and he did his best, poor soul. They got me back to this Bone hospital where the matron was a Scot. I think her name was Foster. No, it can't be, because that was the officer at... she was Scottish, I remember, but she'd been a nurse in the First World War and she still acted as if she was. She was the most brutal woman. she was probably sympathetic, but she was brutal as well. And...
in what way was she brutal?
Well, I'd got a piece of elastoplast, which must have been a foot wide, right across my abdomen to keep myself in. And it had never been moved. And when I got to Bone, the surgeons there decided they ought to have a look. And they said, you needn't look if you don't want to. And I agreed with them. And she got hold of this elastoplast and ripped it off, and I've never shouted so much in my life. And when it came off the middle, it was still attached to the other side. I thought my inside was coming out. It was sort of bubbling, and I thought it's all going to pour out of me all over the place. And they had a look and said, right, we'll have you in the operating theatre tomorrow, and we'll do this and we'll do that. And well, they didn't tell me what they were going to do, but I duly went in the next day. When I came out, the pain in my abdomen was such that I complained. And they said, it's all right, you'll feel a bit sore for 2 days. And also, I'd come out with plaster on my arm with a picture of the wound of the bones which weren't there. So, funny enough, I'd been moving my arm around with a shattered radius for about a fortnight. And I still don't know why it didn't make things worse, but when the nurse came to take the remains of my elastoplast or whatever it was off me, I said, don't do that again, will you? And she was a bit more compassionate and it wasn't quite so bad, but I've never had a pain. And unfortunately, from then on, for the next it was now on June. The next 10 weeks, almost 3 months, the pain was such that if they'd have told me at the time that I'd got to put up with it, I wouldn't have wanted to. It was pretty awful.
Now, just to take you back to Tobaga, you said that the hospital there was a tented hospital. Did you have any awareness of the other patients that were in this place?
Not there, only because I was more... God honest, I was more conscious when I was unconscious than I was when I was awake. I had hallucinations. I dreamt in colour of devils and fires and you know, really.
You were aware of the first morphine injection. You mentioned that your medical note said you there was morphine five times.
Well, that was even before I came to. I mean, this was when.
But that wasn't. Would that have been a part of the stretcher bearers equipment? Could he have?
Well, it would have been the field dressing station or whatever it was.
Now, just going back to the field dressing station, you mentioned that the first person that moved you there was this badly wounded German.
Yeah.
Was he a?
That was interesting actually, because although I was nearly dying, the surgeon said to me, he said, you know, that German didn't expect any treatment. He said he'd been told that if he was wounded, the English wouldn't look after him at all. And, of course, he learned differently afterwards. I don't know what was wrong with him, but he was in a hell of a state. And he must have been conscious, otherwise he wouldn't have told the doctors this. But I don't know what happened to wounded prisoners of war. I don't know where they went. They certainly didn't. I never saw any in the hospitals as such. It's a thing I never thought about, actually. I don't know whether they had hospitals in the prisoner of war camp. They probably did, or whether they were segregated and put in other places. But,
so you weren't aware of them after that?
No. Only as attendants.
Now, you mentioned Dr. Lart. Would that have been the regimental aid post at that stage that he?
He was just regimental MO.
And the people that took you back on the mule, would they be Lincolns, or what you weren't really aware?
I don't know who they were. They were the medical services as such, I suppose.
Now, you mentioned at the stage after the battle had finished, one of your platoon coming up and getting the tea ration. Were you able to establish what had happened to the rest of the men, to the company of, you know?
No, I just heard them say the mine has been captured and Sergeant Nain has been captured. I heard also somebody said Lieutenant Stead, the one I mentioned in the Yorkerites, had been killed. And that was conscious. And also his batman, the one I mentioned who got the water, they found him dead beside him. Apart from that, it was just a big bonfire and sparks. And I remember Major Bell coming round to have a look to see who had been wounded. But nothing specific apart from that. It was.
Were you aware of any of your fellow wounded from the Lincolns? No. You mentioned that.
No, I didn't know them at all. In fact, even that roll book, there were very few men I knew very well. There was one Starbuck, I think his name was, and probably Beddoes. I'm not quite sure. I mean, even Sergeant Jones, I'd only known him for a few weeks, and I wrote to him in hospital. He survived, incidentally. He was the one who wanted his Malachi Svein's doing. They said after the attack he could have them done, so he probably got those done. But I never heard from him at all.